So I wanted to start by telling you a story that's a little bit different than what the choir read for us. In the beginning, there were the gods. Among these gods were Tiamat, the ocean waters, and her husband, Apsu, the fresh waters. Tiamat and Apsu had many, many children, but their children were very noisy and really got on their father's nerves. So Apsu, under the influence of his chief advisor, decided to do away with the whole lot of them. Tiamat pleaded for patience, but to no avail. And the children got word of their father's plan to destroy them, so they went to the god Ea, god of wisdom and many other things, hoping that he could save them. Ea magically put Apsu to sleep and then killed him. Ea and his wife, Damkina, had a son who they named Marduk. Marduk grew to be the tallest and the mightiest of all of the gods. The sky god gave Marduk a gift, control over the four winds. And so Marduk took those winds and set them blowing every which way, creating monstrous storms that upset Tiamat and kept many of the gods from being able to sleep at night. So the gods went to Tiamat and they urged her to battle Marduk. And she agreed. She named her new husband the ruler of all the gods, and she placed him in charge of an army of 11 monstrous demons that had been created specifically for the coming war. Ea heard that Tiamat was preparing for battle, and so upon his father's advice, he and his brother tried to appease Tiamat with incantations, but they were unsuccessful. So Marduk, the tallest and the strongest of all of the gods, volunteered to battle Tiamat and her demons, but only on one condition. If he returned victorious, he would be king of all the gods. Marduk battled Tiamat and her demons and was triumphant. And so, out of vengeance, and after killing Tiamat, he split her into two pieces. He placed half of her into the sky to become the heavens and the other half of her to the earth. He then created the stars and the planets, the moon, the clouds, the mountains, and many other things. And finally, remembering his promises to the gods he now ruled, he took the blood of Tiamat's husband and used it to create humans so that the gods might be released from their burdensome menial labors. A little bit different than what you heard the choir read. And yet, it also is a creation story. And it also is a creation story that was most likely authored around the same time and in the same geographical general location as our creation story. An area of the ancient world known as Mesopotamia, which is just north of the Persian Gulf, kind of all around the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers. This was the key place of civilization in the ancient world. It was lush and green. It was a key travel route as well for many different peoples. And this is the origins, to the best that we can tell, of many of the creation stories. And our creation story has some similarities to the other ones, like the one I just read to you, that were written in that same general area. We figure probably the stories were written about 3,600 years ago, is the best that people can estimate. Now, when you start talking close to 4,000 years in the past, clearly there's wide margin for error, and there's no guarantee that we're absolutely sure. But they make some good cases for that. There were a lot of stories in this time to explain the creation of the world and the creation of people. So here's another one. This is told more in a children's story kind of format, and it begins this way. At the beginning of time, there were only gods and goddesses on earth. They had to work the land to grow crops to eat. This was difficult, and they worked very hard. Each god and goddess had a job to do. Some dug the fields and planted the crops. Others brought water to the fields and ditches that had to be kept clear of weeds. The work was hard, and they were not happy. They got together to discuss what could be done to lighten their workload. And so they went to get advice from Enki, who was wise and clever. Enki was fast asleep in his underwater house. When they woke him, Enki suggested that he create creatures to serve them by working the land. Then the gods and goddesses' lives would be easier. Well, the gods and goddesses thought that Enki's plan was a good solution. And so Enki collected the clay from around his watery home and used it to make humans. He breathed life into the clay figures, but he limited how long they would live. Only the gods and goddesses would live forever. The humans were put to work in the fields as servants of the gods and goddesses. They had to provide them with food and drink for their tables. The humans took water from the rivers and fed the dry and lifeless lands. They dug the soil and planted crops. And with hard work, the humans brought life to the land, and the gods and goddesses who had brought life to the humans were happy. The end, only not really, because there's all sorts of stories that go on after that. So the big question is, why on earth did I tell you these stories, besides the fact that I just thought they were kind of neat? And besides the fact that the creation story that we read in our scriptures in the first chapter of Genesis was written in the same general area at the same time under the same cultural influences as those other stories I just read to you. But here's the idea, is that some people will say, well, our creation story that we know, it's just the same as these other ones. There's all these similarities. So why should we pay any attention to our creation story? Well, here's why. Because our creation story is decidedly different in very, very key points. The image that our creation story gives of who our God is very different from the image of the gods and goddesses that are created in these Mesopotamian creation stories. It's suggested that our creation story was written specifically to show that the Hebrew God, or to combat notions that God and the whole world and humanity had existed all those years ago and served specific individual gods, and that there were all sorts of gods. It was written to show that the Hebrew God was not simply the Hebrew people's God, but that he was God of all creation. He was God of all the people. You see, in most of the Mesopotamian culture, there were so many different gods, hundreds of different gods, and they all had their own unique places that they were in charge of and that they oversaw. But our creation story has one God who is Lord of all creation, of all heaven, and all of the earth. Here are the key differences between our story and these other stories. The obvious being that we have one God, and these stories show a pantheon of gods. That our God is pictured as being benevolent and kind and good and merciful. That our God created the world as kind of this outflow of the love that just bubbled up from within. Very different picture from the pantheon of gods who were petty and cruel and selfish, who had their own whims to be met by the people who served them, who were slaves to them. In these other stories, the creation, the world, requires a lot of hard work before it could possibly be considered good. It's as if the world in its foundation kind of desert was there, but then what the humans were put to task to was to make it something good. This is so different. In our creation story, the world was created good and perfect, and everything that humanity needed was there in the world to begin with. It started as great, and the only reason it stopped being so great was because sin entered the picture. This is very different. All of the other creation stories from this geographical region, all of them have the world starting as being not that great a place. And because of humanity's interventions, it has gotten better over time. It's a definite flip. In these other stories, human beings are created as an afterthought. They're created for the sole purpose of serving the gods. The gods were sick and tired of working, so they made men and women so that they could do the work for them, and the gods could just sit back and accept all the offerings. In our story, the creation of human beings is the crowning achievement, perhaps even the ultimate goal of all creation. And God provides for the human beings rather than requiring them to provide for him. Significant difference that in these other creation stories, human beings have to grow all the food to feed the gods. Our God created a world in which he grew all the food to feed us. In these other stories, there's confusion about what actually existed before creation and what was in fact actually created. There's the stories of this was created, then this, and then this, and then this. But there was something there before because the gods were already hard at work. So what were they hard at work at? There's no real clarity of what was there before and then what was created or how the creation actually started. Our creation story is very, very clear. First, there was nothing. There was just God. And then God spoke and there was light. And God spoke and there was land and there was sea. There were animals, there were plants, there were people. But it started from nothing and just out of God's own voice. Life was breathed. Order was breathed into the midst of the chaos. Our creation story is unique. There aren't any other creation stories like ours. And that's because our God is unique. That there aren't other gods like ours. Now, in the ancient world, it went without saying that, of course, there were lots of gods. A lot of times you'll read in the New Testament that God proclaiming that he is Lord of all the gods. That's not saying, yeah, there's all these other gods. But in the ancient people's minds, they needed to know that the one God was different from all these other little petty beings that were being proclaimed in the rest of the culture. When I was thinking about the so what of this. That's always the question I ask when I'm thinking of sermons. I get all excited about just researching the scripture, but then, okay, so what? Who cares? Is it just interesting information? Or is there something that matters in this? And I think in all of those differences, we aren't really all that different from the ancient world. So in the ancient world, they had this pantheon of gods. They had all of these beings who were demanding the service and the time and the attention and the energy of the people who served them versus the one God who chose to be benevolent and kind and gracious and to give to the people. Well, how many gods do we have in our culture? How many gods are there out there that are demanding your time and your energy and your talents and everything that you have to give? Do you come to church this morning just completely exhausted by life because there are so many things pulling at you from every direction? The demands of your job, the demands of your kids. Don't be fooled. Our kids have become little gods in our culture. The demands of family, the demands of whatever else is out there, the demands of a culture that is marred by consumerism, where every time you look, there's people, there's things telling you, you need that, buy that, spend money, do this, buy that, have more of this. These are all our gods. We haven't personified them the way that they were in the ancient world, but let's not be fooled and let's be honest about the fact that for many of us, there are lots of other things demanding our service besides the one God. The one God who says, I have given you everything that you need for abundant life. You don't exist to be my slave. You exist because I had too much love and you came out of it. And I put you in a world that is intended to bless you. This beautiful gift I give to you, our God says. In these other stories, creation wasn't that great. Nobody would have said, and it was good. It had a lot of hard work and the people were responsible for making creation good. Well, let me say, I think that we are responsible for making our creation good again. That we've taken lousy care of our world. But that's the beauty of this picture that's painted for us in Genesis 1. It's the picture of the way the world was when it was first created, and it's the picture of the way that the world is going to be when it is reborn, when God finally redeems and reconciles all creation to himself. That's the picture that we are going towards. Every time you're grumbling about putting your recycling box out because you've forgotten you had to get up at 6 a.m. to get it out by the curb. Every time you see a piece of trash on the ground and you mutter about the people who threw it there, but you pick up anyways. What you're doing is you're working towards making the picture of what our world is back to what it was when it started, what it was intended to be, and what God promises that it will be. And yes, he asks us to be part of that. But we don't do hard work with our world because it's lousy without it. We do it because God has given us something beautiful and extraordinary. He has blessed us with something. And we need to care for it. And we need to treat it with the respect that a gift from God is due. In the other stories across the board, human beings are created as an afterthought. The only reason they're created is to serve the gods. Well, I don't know about people in this church, but I know that there are people in our world who the world looks at and says, your only reason for existence is to service the needs of others. That we live in a world that is still burdened by slavery and horrific oppressions and crimes against humanity. Why? Because something in us says some people were only created to serve others. Those others we might not call the gods, but our view of humanity doesn't quite match God's view of humanity as created in our Genesis story. I think sometimes we fall under the same misconceptions as those other creation stories that say humanity is not something special. Humanity doesn't matter. And our God says that's wrong. Humanity is my crowning achievement. I love humanity. Humanity is made in the image of God Almighty himself. I think it's important to realize in a culture where the creation story is just pretty much everybody in our country could say it with their eyes closed. They know the basics of what the story is. Maybe not what order things happen in. We all get confused about that. But the creation story is what our culture has been steeped in. But it's important to remember that the information our creation story gives us about who God is and what he thinks about us is unique in the world. And we need to allow it to be unique again in us so that we can grab onto it and we can proclaim what it means when we say our God is the creator of all things. That over and over again, God said, God saw what he had made and it was good. Until he made people, did you notice that? And God saw the people he had made and he proclaimed them very good. And so I ask you the question of whether or not you think it matters or you think it's important for us to proclaim that God is creator. We use all sorts of names for God. Is the creator name important in this day and age? Now, I've clearly made my bias, my answer to that question, I think pretty obvious. But I want you to talk about, if you agree that yes, it's important, about why that's important. What does it mean to you that God is the creator? And if you don't think it's important, then you know what? Talk about that too. Or just spend some quiet time reflecting on that.